to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Good evening and welcome to the most beautiful city in the absolute world, Houston, Texas. And welcome to Breaking the Silence. Look at this beautiful day behind me. The sun has just gone down. Looking over the Texas Medical Center where I work just right about there on the 10th floor, and Texas Children's Hospital and Baylor College of Medicine at the OB-GYN department. And it has just been a beautiful day here. We have an awesome guest tonight. This is one of those, if the program cost you anything, it doesn't, but if it did, this is a money back guarantee program tonight. I promise you, I am so excited because I absolutely fell in love with the book that our guest has written this evening. I didn't even know this was an issue until I read it, and it started slapping me right between the eyes with the 2x4, and it got my attention really quick. So you're really going to enjoy the program tonight. Next week on our program, we have David Stevens with Tabor College, and he is going to be talking about the trauma-informed master's degree program that they have instilled there that's going very well, and the issue and the importance of being trauma-informed in our world right now. And let's face it, what's just happened this week, what's happened the last 2 weeks in the news, what's happened the last 2 years with COVID, we need to be more aware of trauma-informed practices than what we ever have. And look, and I'm being serious as a heart attack, this is on to the cover of today's Houston Chronicle Sunday paper, and it says distressed. And let me just read you the sub-headline here. Texas students don't have enough mental health providers. As leaders fail to fix it, kids suffer. This is a three-part newspaper article, and the next part comes out April 10th and the next April 13th. And I tell you what, folks, to me, this is what we need to be focusing on, our children, that generation. I'm so excited that my new book's coming out, and hopefully in the month of April, called When the Dark Clouds Come, and it's for teenagers and 20-year-olds, because that is the generation that we have absolutely not only dropped the ball on, we slammed the ball down and just forgot about them. We have let them go, and we need to put every emotion, every resource that we have back into them and embrace them, help them, encourage them, love them, train them, because they are going to be the generation that takes us to levels that we've only dreamed about. And I just really want, I think our guest is going to have a lot of wisdom on that, because she probably, out of all the years we've done this program, has more wisdom than anybody that we've ever tapped into. So it is an honor tonight to have Deborah Grayson Regal with us tonight. And she is not only an author, she wouldn't even put that in her little bio, but is an unbelievable author, a keynote speaker, an executive coach, and a consultant who has taught leadership communication for Wharton Business School, Duke Corporate Education, Columbia Business School's Women in Leadership Program, and Beijing, what in the world? Beijing International MBA Program at Peking University. Now listen to this. If this don't get you impressed, nothing will. She writes for the Harvard Business Review. Psychology Today, Forbes, Fast Company. I read these magazines all the time, and it's been featured in Bloomberg Business Week, the Wall Street Journal, and the New York Times. And she is the author. And write this down, because you'll want to get this book before the program's out this evening. And the book is entitled Go to Help. 31 ways to offer, ask for, and accept help. And that's where we're going to drill down into tonight. And another book, several books, but another one called Overcoming Overthinking, 36 ways to tame anxiety for work, school, and life. And I promise you, I'm going to buy that this evening and start reading it next week. And consults and speaks for clients, including Amazon, BlackRock, Google, Kraft, Heinz, PepsiCo. That's what I'm drinking tonight, PepsiCo, and the United States Army. And I know right now my son in Seattle is going, yes, Curtis is excited. And you can find her online at DeborahGraysonRegal.com. And we're going to just bring her on right now. Deborah, welcome to the program. And I want to let you know I am in awe of you. And thank you for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me. And thank you for the good work that you are putting into the world.
Well, I tell you what, I am so excited because I have so many questions. And like all publishers do, they always send talking points and, hey, you know, but we do things different here. We're just going to throw out some topics. I want to know what you're passionate about, what you think about this. Is this something that gets you concerned? What's your opinion on this right now and your take on what's going on with the last couple of years with that generation that I think is really limping along right now, and they need help?
I think we're in crisis. I think we're in crisis at all ages. And as your local paper highlighted, young folks, whether they're, you know, tweens, younger than tweens, teens, and even in their early adolescence, have really had a huge chunk of their lives upended and truncated. And when I think about what it's like to be an adult, I was about to say a mature adult, and then I realized I probably have a few people who would laugh at me if they heard that. But what it's like to be an adult and have all of the resources and the resilience available to me to recover from the last few years, and that's as a grown up, our children are really, really having a hard time. And I think you're absolutely right that there need to be physical, emotional, mental health resources available for our young people in unprecedented ways and without question and without it becoming a political issue.
Oh, that's good too, because sometimes we end up doing that, then we take years before we ever do anything about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
With the work and the expertise that you do, what is the main thing that you're focused on right now besides just writing? And you're just writing out unbelievable. And nobody understands how hard it is to write, but apparently you've got that figured out because you do it very well.
Thank you.
You're most interested in right now and focusing on?
So the last two books that I wrote, Overcoming Overthinking and the most recent one, Go to Help, are both books that I've co-written with my daughter, Sophie, who is a junior at Duke University. We wrote the first one together when she was a freshman at Duke, and now she's a junior at Duke. And we both feel really strongly that one of the most important things that we can be doing is trying to normalize conversations about asking for help and offering help. Both Sophie and I have mental illness and have found that the best way that we can cope with our mental illness is actually by talking about it, normalizing it for ourselves, normalizing it for others, and being really clear that nobody goes through life alone and that asking for help is something that we should be leaning into rather than something that should bring shame to us.
Wow. Did March Madness yesterday bring some stress upon you? Have you got the UNC played against Duke? And here, do you guys cheer for different teams, or are you all for the same team?
No. So we are in this house. We are Duke fans since our daughter goes to
your morning. Okay.
Yeah. So last night was a rough night with the game. Although I give my daughter an awful lot of credit, she had been a competitive athlete in high school, and she recognized that winning is good outcome, a really good outcome. That's not what happened. But playing a really, really good game at the top of your skill level is another really positive outcome. And while so she wasn't happy that they lost, she had the wherewithal to recognize that it was a really, really good game. And she valued that as well.
Yeah, I love Coach K. It was a wonderful, wonderful night. Let me tell you, after I read your book, first of all, I didn't really know exactly what we're going to talk about tonight. And then when I started reading it, and I always read from cover to cover every guest that we have, because I think that's my duty to do that. And I always buy the book. I never ask for a free one. I always buy it because I think, I need to invest in you too. You're investing your time with me tonight. And when I started reading that, I'm thinking, wow, wow. And when I got to chapter two, I wrote the little quote that you had at the beginning of underneath your chapter two, a little staple.
I got to look.
Yeah, it goes like this. I'll read it to you. They thought they were helping me, but it didn't help. They thought they were fixing me, but I wasn't broken. They thought they were watering me, but they were drowning me. Now, that's a powerful statement that came from another person that you put in the book. I love that quote. It's like, wow. What's that mean to you as you started into that process of people needing to ask for help, and how do they do that? How did that all process out of like, wait, there's a book here?
Yeah. So a few things. So first of all, one of the things that quote points to, which I believe was a retired member of the U.S. Armed Forces,
yes,
is the idea that we as helpers are often well-intentioned, but with poor execution. Right. So here is somebody who was describing that people were trying to fix him and he did not feel the need to be fixed. We are often so eager to help someone that we don't ask what kind of help would be helpful to you right now. And especially if we're the sort of person who's been a problem solver or a shoulder to cry on or any other kind of helping technique that we have been recognized and rewarded for in our personal lives and our professional lives, we forget to ask for feedback, to ask for permission. Is this way of helping actually helpful to you? And if not, what would be more helpful? So helpers tend to feel that they are being evaluated on their helping intentions. The person who is asking for the help or accepting the help is actually judging you on the impact of your help. And so that strikes me as a really important conversation that we all need to be having. How is what I'm trying to do matching to what it is you actually need?
You know, I when I started reading that, I'm thinking, wow, that was my mom. I would call my mother before she passed away and would tell her a situation that I was dealing with. And she'd say, okay, Greg, this is what we need to do. What I'm going to go ahead and do is I'm going to go down and get you this, and I'll mail it to you in the mail tomorrow from Orlando, Florida, and I'll take care of this. And it was like, whoa, wait, mom, I just wanted to tell you about what's going on in life. I didn't want you to do it, even though I appreciated it. And then I find myself cutting people off when they're telling me their problems by saying, this is how to deal with it and answer it. And it's like, wait, I'm my mom again.
We're all our moms. We're all our moms.
That parents sometimes jump in and try to fix problems that their children are going through without any understanding of, hey, wait, don't fix it for them. Teach them how to fix it themselves.
Yes, that is a huge part of the work that we wrote in this book. And that's actually why I think the parent-child perspective as co-authors was really helpful here. My mother does that to me only with the best of intentions. And I have no doubt that I do that to my kids as well, even though I wrote a book on how not to do it. I mean, right, old habits die hard. But yes, when you are wanting to help somebody, when you have the resources available to help somebody, right? I can give you time, energy, connections, money, wisdom, whatever you need. When I am feeling like I have riches to share with you and you don't want it, maybe because you are working on building your own independence, you are working on your own autonomy, you have a plan that's different than my plan and you don't want it, it can feel like a rejection of me, right? And so part of asking for help and offering help is having conversations about the relationship, that me telling you I don't want that kind of help isn't me rejecting you, even though it may feel that way. It's really about me demonstrating my independence, trying it on my own, trying to do it my way rather than your way. And those conversations don't happen enough.
Do you think it would be great wisdom then for those people that tend to try to overtake someone else's problem to ask the question, hey, what can I do in this situation that would most best help you? And what do you need? Instead of saying, this is what you need.
That's right. And I would add one more piece to that, which is sometimes it's hard for people to identify the help they need, but it's often a lot easier for people to be able to name what they don't need. So even adding the question of what wouldn't feel helpful to you right now, right? What wouldn't feel helpful? And I might be able to say, well, what wouldn't feel helpful for me right now is for you to take over, because this is something I'm going to have to learn to do myself. Or it wouldn't be helpful right now for, you know, you to give me a ton of advice on this, because I really need to process this myself. And in thinking about what I don't need, I'm likely to get clearer about what I do need. And it feels like it gives me permission to ask for that.
Do you, when you wrote this book with your daughter, and hopefully one time we'll get you both on the program.
We would love it.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Did you have this written for both sides, people that need help and people that like to help people? So it's kind of a double-edged sword of wisdom of, hey, wait, if I'm in this role, I can get so much wisdom, because I saw so many things in here that I just kept circling and highlighting, and I'm going to use this book all the time.
Thank you. And we are all those people, right? So it's not for some people or for other people. Every single one of us offers help in different scenarios. Every single one of us asks for help, some of us more than others. And every single one of us at some point has had to accept help. So the book is written for everyone. Many of us have strengths in some areas more than others. So I personally am much better at offering than asking. And I'm better at asking than I am in accepting. And I don't think I'm unusual in that way. But all of us wear those different hats as pro-social members of society, of people who are wired to want to be of help and build community.
When I deal with a lot of abused people that have been hurt, they've been traumatized, I find, and I have to often tell myself, you know, the old saying, you have two ears and one mouth. Try to listen great. Try twice as much. Although it's hard for me sometimes, I have to literally edit myself and hold myself back. How important is that in this whole gamut of offering and trying to help people and asking for help, of using our listening skills much more than our speaking skills?
It's so critically important that it shows up in several of the strategies that we cover in the book. Part of listening, helping somebody focus on what they really want help with. It's a part of empathizing as well. If you are doing the talking, you are coming in with a ready-made solution for a problem that may or may not exist. It's like trying to squeeze somebody's foot into a shoe that is the wrong size. And not only will listening give you more information about the kind of help that person wants, it creates the kind of trust and bond and psychological safety you need in order for somebody to open up to the idea of receiving help.
Wow. You know, you just hit on something that I hadn't even thought about. You know, we have a lot of medical professionals that are listening, to listen to the show weekly. And I think sometimes doctors need to keep the textbook on the back shelf every now and then, and don't jump to automatically, this drug is the one that'll fix you, but just go in and sit and listen.
Yeah.
What are really the issues? Not just the little things you circled on the survey before you went in, or why you were even there. Because I think sometimes we misdiagnose things because it had nothing to do with what I circled when I actually drilled down to what the need really is.
Yes. And I think those things like confirmation bias are shortcuts that help us make quick decisions. Like, oh, this is what I knew the problem was all along, right? It helps us make sense of the world in a quicker way, but it also means that we are likely to miss an awful lot of new information that can be helpful.
That's great. Tell you what, 888-627-6008. If you want to get involved, I'm looking right now. We are live on Facebook, too. If you want to comment on there, you're welcome to do that. And we're going to take our first commercial break now. And on the other side of this break, I really want to kind of drill down deep into why is offering help so difficult, so complex, so deep. And we'll be right back with our awesome guest, Deborah Grayson Regal. Don't leave us. We'll be right back here for this commercial break. Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network. Welcome back. I tell you what, if you have not written this book down, if you wouldn't mind, Deborah, hold the book up so people can see the beautiful cover and to go to help, 31 strategies to offer, ask for, and accept help. She wrote this with her daughter, and it is an excellent book. Everybody just get on Amazon right now. Is that the best way, Deborah, that you recommend people to get a hold of it? What's the best way?
Amazon is great. And of course, you can always support your local bookseller and ask them to stock it in their store, and they'll be happy to do that for you as well.
And if people want to get in touch with you, because sometimes I'll chase a squirrel or a rabbit up to the very last second and they cut us off. If somebody wants to get in touch with you about your website and they have a question for you, what's the best way to reach out to you?
Yeah, best way to reach me is on my website, DeborahGraysonRegal.com, or come find me on LinkedIn. Let's be LinkedIn friends, and that way you'll have an opportunity to message me there as well.
I would love to do that. Let's do that. I'll do that during the next commercial.
I'll
take you an invite. Fantastic. Why is the complexity of offering and asking for help, why is it such a huge problem that needs to have this much conversation about? What's the issue?
Yeah, so there are a number of issues that make this complex. One of the ways that offering help is complex is that we come into offering help perhaps with a track record. So we might think that when we're offering help as a clean slate, right? As simple as you've got something you need and I've got something I can offer. But many of us over the course of our lives, either through habit or role model or other ways, have developed some offering help strategies that actually interfere with other people's interest and willingness to take our help. So some things to think about is sometimes we help people without ever asking for feedback about whether that help was actually helpful. Sometimes we offer help, somebody didn't take the help, and we say, well, I told you so. Had you listened to me, you wouldn't be in this situation. Sometimes we offer help and then expect the person to constantly thank us for our help. Sometimes we offer to help, and what our offer of help means is that we're just going to take it over and do it for them. And sometimes we offer to help someone when we can't help them don't want to help them or shouldn't help them. And trust me, they know about it. So if you're thinking about offering help to somebody, you want to do a little bit of check-in with yourself of where have I maybe offered help in the past and meant to be helpful, but it maybe didn't land as helpful as I intended. We've got a lot of messy habits around offering help where we need to do a little bit of cleanup.
That's interesting. Did you notice when he was writing this with your daughter, a person of another generation, that there was a difference in the understanding and there was had to be a meeting of the minds with like, wait, you look at it this way? No, Mom, I look at it this way. How complex was that when you wrote about this particular subject?
Yeah, so this is our second collaboration together. We're very good writing partners with each other. And one of the things that we do very well is we can anticipate where we will need help from each other. And so that is something that I think generations, whether you're the same generation or across generations, being able to have enough of a relationship where, for example, I knew that in the planning phase of this book, there was a structure that we needed to follow. You know what I'm not great at? Following rules. But my daughter is great at following rules. And so she was really able to help me follow the rules of the planning part of this book. When it came to the writing of it, I have 3 decades worth of stories more than she has, right? And so when there were times that we needed to pull in stories and examples, I knew that I would be able to help build that out just because I have more depth of experience there. So one of the ways in which we really helped each other was being able to anticipate what would be hard for each of us and then being willing to offer help with no strings attached, with no I told you so's in the places where we needed somebody to complement what we could already do.
Wow. In your role as executive coach, besides all the writing that you do for all these wonderful publications, what's some of the greatest need that people are needing a cheerleader for or a professor for, or just some wisdom on that? It's just like, wait, they're not grasping what they really need to be able to become successful, or at least successful in their own mind. Is it past problems and trauma? Or what do you think it is that seems to be the biggest hurdle?
Yeah, so one of the biggest hurdles that the clients that I work with face, and you know, in this context, I will call myself a client as well because I am no different from the leaders that I work with. You know, one of the things that we fail to recognize is that anything that we're currently doing, any kind of behavior that we have, even if it's a behavior we say we want to change, there's something we want to do differently to have better relationships at work, to have better outcomes in business, whatever it may be, whatever behavior we're engaged in now is actually getting us something, even if it's costing us something that we say that we want. The idea behind this is what's known as immunity to change. And so before any leader who I work with changes a behavior, we need to look at what the current behavior is actually getting them, how it is serving them. And until you are able to get that need met in some other way, you're actually not going to make a really good behavior change. And I would imagine that you probably know this so clearly in your work, that people who have experienced abuse and trauma have a whole set of behaviors that even though they are interfering, they're actually really protecting behaviors. Yes. They are getting them something that feels foundationally important to them. And we can't just rip those behaviors away. Those are the things that keep us safe.
Yeah, those bumper rails in life that we put around, those walls, you start tearing those down and I get really uncomfortable. But I realize that a lot of them are self-made that need to go anyway. So I start taking a brick down at a time to make sure it's safe to do. That's powerful.
Yeah. And I think if I think about the sort of number one topic that I am teaching about, it's typically around navigating tricky and hard and vulnerable conversations. And the same model applies, which is if there's a conversation, whether it's a feedback conversation or a career conversation or a conversation you want to have with your kid or your parent, typically, if you're avoiding having that conversation, it's because it is helping you feel safe to not invite potential conflict. For as long as you don't have a hard conversation, you don't have to find out that maybe you had some contribution here. Maybe you've got some culpability here as well. As long as you avoid having a difficult conversation, you get to be right. And I don't know about you, but I love to be right. And so for as long as I'm not asking somebody else for their opinion or perspective, I get to be right. And so a big part of my work is helping people have challenging conversations in the workplace with colleagues and clients, and helping them realize that they've got some mindsets that are getting in their way of helping them advance a relationship and a business objective forward.
How do you crack the shell around somebody's heart that has been put there by themselves, by their past, and realizing that you have to have a breakthrough for them to really go to that next level? How do you get them to understand this is hurting you in the place that you are in? We have to soften this up and step out into a little bit of uncertainty to be able to realize that, you know, there's a safety net there. We can always return back. But how hard is that for you to actually break something that has been in someone for years?
Yeah. So I don't actually think of my role as breaking it for them. I think of my role is helping support them through the process of their own realization that what got them here won't get them there. What has been serving them up until now probably won't serve them into the kind of future they want for themselves. So my job is not to show them or force them or make them. My job is to help them explore their own thinking, the impact of their own behavior, so that they actually come to it themselves. So I very much trust in the inner wisdom and a lot of time outer wisdom of my clients. I don't do a lot of shell cracking. I'm trying to think if there's a better analogy. I don't do a lot of shell cracking. What I probably do is a lot of shell stroking to say, wow, this shell has been protecting you for a long time. It must have formed for a really, really good reason. Let's talk about those good reasons. And then let's see if the conditions have changed where maybe such a tough outer shell isn't still the kind of protection that you need. And then we explore other ways of looking at it.
Wow, you're good.
Yeah. Well, I went to school for this. So thank you. Yes, I learned from people who've been doing this a really, really long time. Nobody wants to be forced or taken kicking and screaming to see another perspective. So if you can stand with them in their perspective and say, wow, it makes so much sense that you would have this hard shell. Let's talk about what had you develop this. They're going to be much more willing to open up and have the conversation because they know you're in it with them and you're on their side. You're not pushing them and forcing them to try something they're not ready to do.
That's great. Now, chapter 4 in the book, you can't help someone who doesn't want to be helped.
Yes.
What parts of life does that relate to? Or is that from people that have bad attitudes, people that have bad work ethics, people that are alcoholic, that have dependencies? I mean, does it fall into everybody's category? But tell me what you mean by that broad base of that chapter.
Yeah. So one of the things that I learned when I went to coaching school to get trained as an executive coach is a quote that really stuck with me and has probably helped me more as a parent than a coach. But here's the quote. And the quote is, the person who is most attached to a particular outcome has the most to lose. So the person who is most attached to something turning out a specific way has a lot more to lose than the person who is unattached to it as well. And so I think about the idea of you cannot help somebody who does not want help. From the perspective of a parent, there have been plenty of times that I've wanted to help my kids, and they did not want my help. And me stepping in to help them when they didn't want my help would have negatively impacted the relationship over the long term. And so I had to be willing to sit with an outcome that may not have been what I wanted so that they could learn, experiment, and grow. And so this is anything from parenting to being a kid dealing with older parents to leaders in the workplace. You cannot make somebody take your help if they do not want it. And we certainly do talk in the book about the fact that there are situations where people are at risk of physical harm for themselves or other people, significant financial risk, reputational risk, where it is worth potentially impairing the relationship to get the person the help that they need. And so you just want to be able to do a very quick cost-benefit analysis. I've been in situations where I've been on the phone with friends who have been suicidal. And in that moment, I'm not worrying about, are they going to be mad at me if I get them help that they don't want? I'm worried about, are they going to be alive tomorrow? And I'm willing to make that sacrifice.
Well, how hard is that, those decisions when they don't want to help, but you have to do something? Because both ways, I can see it as a parent. There's times that I would tell my teenagers, hey, you need to do this or this is going to happen. Well, they don't listen. They do it anyway. Mm-hmm. And even though I want to force that, it's like, okay, you're going to learn the lesson. It's going to hurt. How hard is it to step back and go learn the lesson?
Incredibly hard. And right, I want to make a distinction between a kid saying, I'm going to go out driving impaired, right? Having had something to drink, or I'm going to go out and drive and not wear a seatbelt. Those are situations where I am not willing for my kid to learn a lesson the hard way.
Right.
It could hurt them. It could hurt somebody else. And so I'm willing to have them angry with me, frustrated with me, feel like I'm taking away their independence on autonomy. And I'm willing to live with those negative impacts because I'm not willing to live with them hurting themselves or somebody else in a permanent way. But somebody who decides they're not going to study for a test, even though I think they should, well, that's going to hurt if it turns out that way. But that is not something that I can offer my advice if they want it. And at a certain point, most of us have learned things by screwing it up and brushing ourselves off and coming back and trying another day.
Wow. Is one of the parents' downfalls wanting to be their children's best friend instead of their parent?
Absolutely. And look, I'm not a parenting expert. I want to be really, really clear about that. I feel like the first time I claim I'm a parenting expert, something is going to show why I'm learning along the way. But my philosophy and my husband's philosophy in parenting our twins was always, I care less that they like me. If they like me, that's nice. My job here is to help guide them through life, help them tolerate difficult emotions, help them tolerate frustration, learn how to treat people respectfully, learn how to respect themselves. If they do like us, that makes life a lot easier and it will be better for the amount of psychological safety and trust in the relationship. But that was not our job ever, to be their friends. We just got lucky that it turned out that way at the end.
That's great. Tell you what, we're going to take our second break. 888-627-6008. I'm looking here on the Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page that people are on. And my phone's starting to vibrate over here. So that means that there's a lot of comments that are coming through that maybe I'll look at during this break. On the other side of this, if you want to hang with us, and I hope you do, we're going to find out what I call the Lone Ranger Syndrome and what that is all about, according to your chapter 5, I believe, if I remember right, in the book. And then we're going to talk about the strategies and why did you only pick 31? And maybe I have pulled out a couple of them that I really want to drill down deeper into. We'll be right back with Deborah Grayson Regal on the other side of this break. You're right.
HCI Publishing that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back. We're just having an awesome time with our guests tonight. I'm going to kick up the chat here to make sure. My phone is kind of going crazy with some comments, so it's all good. Nobody has slammed us yet, which is always good. I don't get very many negatives, but that's wonderful. I call it the Lone Ranger Syndrome. Your chapter 5, I think, deals with that issue. Help me with that, because I am guilty of that, and feel free to bill me after this for therapy, if you wish.
I'd have to bill myself too.
What's the issue with this?
Yeah, so the issue is starting at around age 7, we start to associate reputational risks with asking for help. And so as a result of the fact that we start to realize, oh, asking for help may make me seem weak, may make it seem like I don't know what I'm doing, may make me beholden to other people, we decide that we would rather just go it alone and figure it out ourselves rather than asking other people for help. And so these reputational costs or reputational barriers that we start to develop at a very young age just continue on through our adulthood. And so we take on so much ourselves, because we believe that asking other people for help is going to show we don't know things. We're going to burden them. We're going to take up too much time. It's going to undermine our credibility and our reputation. And so we get ourselves overwhelmed because we have to do it alone.
Is this self-mutilation on our own part by saying, hey, wait, because I do this even when I need help and somebody mm-hmm. will offer, I'll say, nope, I got it. Yep. What's wrong with me? Why do we do this?
Yeah. So in the same way that we said before, we could always ask what's wrong with us. My focus is, well, what's right with us, right? So where do we learn this? We learned that, people who seemingly did things on their own were rewarded. Great job. Look at you. You did that all by yourself, right? Think about what you say to a 3-year-old when they finally learn to tie a shoe or something like that, even though I think these days it's Velcro, right? We say, look at you. You did that all by yourself. So imagine the wiring of all by yourself from age 3 years old to, you know, I'm already 23 now. You might even be 25.
I'm 25, yeah.
Right? Exactly. So I'm glad I got that right. So the idea behind it is we have been rewarded and we feel really good when we do things autonomously and independently. And the shadow side of the pride that we have around doing things autonomously and independently, the shadow side is we think there's a penalty involved in needing other people's assistance. And that penalty sometimes is based in reality, right? We have had people who have embarrassed us, had there be strings attached, had quid pro quo when we have asked for their help. And more often than not, it is a story that we make up in our own head to keep us from reaching out to others and potentially risk being rejected in our requests for help.
Hmm. Does it have anything to do with control?
I have no doubt that everything in my life has something to do with control. Say a little bit more about what you mean.
Sometimes I probably use this as an excuse. It's easier for me to stay 2 hours longer or come in 2 hours earlier at the office and do it myself than ask somebody else to do it and we have to fix it all the time.
Sure.
And so it's like, it is a control, but that person could probably do it better than I ever dreamed of. And I think I have that control issue.
Yeah. And it's a short term win for a longer term cost. So I do a writing, I teach workshops on the topic of delegating, right? Mm. And we know that there are these emotional barriers to giving it to somebody else. Nobody will do it the way I do it. It's quicker for me just to do it myself. What if they do it really well and I don't get the credit, right? So many things that keep us up at night about letting somebody else do it. And so the more we keep doing something on our own, the less likely anybody else is going to learn it or be able to take it over from us, which means we continue to add to the burden of things that we're doing without increasing our willingness to ask for help. So it just pounds on top of that we say we don't want help and therefore we don't get help. And then we have more things that we have to do ourselves without getting help.
Well, a delegating conference, I would love to go to that workshop because I need that.
Well, good. I'm not going to go. I'm going to delegate it to you. You go.
There's a couple of help strategies that I wrote down that I'd like to get into, and then I'll let you finish this out however you want, what you think our listeners need to hear. But I think it was help strategy number 19, set smart and smartest goals. And you have those as, I guess, each letter means something in acronyms. What do you mean by the goals and how important is goal setting in our daily life? And how many people even have goals nowadays? It seems like, oh, do we really need them? I have to have a list or I don't get anything done.
Yeah. So setting a goal is a really good way for you to even articulate what you want. And similarly, it helps you identify what you don't want, right? So if I'm saying that I have a goal for myself that by the end of 2022, I want to have given 16 keynotes on the topic of offering and asking for help, well, it makes it clear what I want to do. And then it also helps me decide what I don't want to do, because if it doesn't fall into that pile, it may be something that I need to say no to, or maybe even ask for some help from somebody else to do as well. And most people in the world of business are familiar with a SMART goal, right? Specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound. And so in the book, we do believe that those elements hold a little weight. But one of the ways that we can help ourselves and help other people who may need some support and direction around goals is increasing SMART to smartest. And so I, of course, had to take a look at what the acronym was. I definitely wrote it when it was earlier in the day. And so in addition to specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound, if you have somebody who you're trying to help accomplish a goal, you might want to ask them smartest. So the first S is special, right? What about this thing feels really special to you? And just by asking that, it helps somebody get really clear about why this thing as opposed to any other things. Mm. M is motivating, right? What are you looking forward to the most? And just to be clear, I am reading this. I can't remember them all from scratch. So just by asking somebody, what are you looking forward to? What feels motivating? It taps into a part of their brain that unleashes feelings of positivity so that you actually are drawn towards the thing rather than away from it. A, aspirational. What will be different for you when you achieve this? How is this something bigger than you even had imagined? Resonant, how does this align with your goals? What feels important to you? What you value the most? That's timely, important. Right? What makes this the right time for you to take it on? E, energizing. S, simple. That's maybe my favorite one. How could you simplify this so it's not too complicated? And truthful. How can you trust yourself in the process? And you and I both know that people who have experienced traumatic situations often don't trust themselves. And so even asking somebody, how can you trust yourself, heightens their awareness that, oh, that's actually a really important aspect of moving forward in any part of work or life, is trusting myself, trusting my abilities, trusting my intentions, trusting the community around me to be in service of rather than fighting against me.
That was one of my favorites. And I circled that whole number 19 strategies. Like, I need that. I need that. I'm going to be putting that up on my wall at the office. And then the other one was, I believe, number 30, which I need. Promote the pause.
Yes.
Oh, that's, how important is that?
I'm not supposed to pick favorites, but that is definitely one of my favorites, right? And so, you know, the example that we write in the book, which was so very timely, was thinking about Simone Biles in the last Olympics, who stopped, right? She said, you know what? My head is not in the right place right now. If I keep going, even though it's what's expected of me, everybody's watching, I've trained for this my whole life. If I keep going, I am likely to injure myself in a significant way. And so sometimes one of the best ways that we can help ourselves and one of the best ways we can help other people is just to invite them to pause, right? We're so often going on automatic pilot, just proceeding in a way because it's what we've always done or it's what we said we were going to do. And sometimes when your car is rolling backwards down a hill in reverse, just shifting it into neutral gets you the time you need to figure out, where do I want to go next? So if you've got something that isn't working, just stop, evaluate it, take a breath, consider your other options before you just keep moving forward in the direction that isn't working.
That is so good. I have a line in my book that's probably one of my favorite lines, and it goes something like, sometimes on the road of life, you have to slow down to be able to catch your dream. Because I really think sometimes we think fast forward and turbo speed is the only way I'm ever going to make it to that goal. And sometimes, at least in my world, I have to slow down.
Yes.
And that number 30 laid me out. It was like, wow, that is so powerful.
And going back to the topic that we talked about before, right? The same messages that we got at age 3 that said, look at you, you did that yourself. We have messages coming from everywhere saying, you know, come on, plow forward. Don't lose sight of what's in front of you. Keep going. Never give up. I don't agree with that. Right. And it sounds like that hasn't worked well for you as well. There's a time and a place to push forward. And there's a time and a place that we underestimate to stop pushing forward, to pause and to reorient ourselves.
Fantastic. What would you like to leave with us? If you had everybody in the country listening right now to the next minute of wisdom that you have, and they're all leaning in, yeah. Deborah, what would you share with them that is so important right now in our world that they need for their own help?
I would say that there are 3 really powerful questions that you can and should be asking the people that you live with, the people in your community, and the people in your workplace. Okay. One question is, how have I been most helpful to you in the past? Number 2 is, what have I done in the past where it wasn't as helpful as I thought it would be? And number 3 is, how can I be most helpful to you right now? And then really listen to their answers.
Wow. That is so good. That is so good. Deborah, I can't say thank you enough. And make sure you put your book up one more time. I highly, highly, highly recommend it. Do Deborah a favor that I wish people would do for all of our guests. Not only get the book, but after you're done with it, please get back on Amazon and review it. Reviews are so hard to get nowadays. And support her, like her on her Facebook or whatever, I don't know how all that stuff helps. But this book, Go to Help, is an absolute awesome book, and I highly recommend it. And thank you so much for sharing your time with us tonight.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
And hopefully we can have you next book you write, let me know, and we'll have you write on the week it kicks off, I promise.
You got it.
Okay. Thank you, and enjoy North Carolina. We'll talk soon.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Like we like to do every week. I always do this, and I always end the program every way, every time the same way. And I think it's so important, especially when we're seeing this and we're seeing things happen all around. We're seeing people that is in prestigious positions lose it at an Oscar ceremony, just like that, and your life changes. Let me tell you, no matter what is going on in your life and whatever's happened to you in the past, no matter what you're dealing with right now in your life, I want to let you know there's always hope. There's always hope. And break out of that shell that our guest spoke about so much tonight. Don't be afraid to ask for help. And because that was my biggest downfall. I waited over 35 years before I even told anybody that I needed it. And by that time, everything inside of me was broken. And it took several years to get it back up to somewhat normalcy now. But and then no matter what you're going to face tomorrow, I do want to promise you, there's hope. Join us next week. But before you go to bed tonight, make sure you order the book. You can do it right on Kindle and get it right there immediately and start reading it before you go to bed tonight. Go to help. 31 ways to offer, ask for, and accept help. And then next week, we're going to have an awesome guest, David Stevens from Tabor College. God bless you. Have an awesome week. Enjoy life. And hey, somewhere in the middle of next week, when everything is so stressed out and just running at turbo speed, do everybody a favor. Pause. Just stop. Take a breath. And make sure you're heading in the right direction. Thanks for joining us this week. And join us next week for another edition of Breaking the Silence, live from Houston, Texas. God bless. Have an awesome week.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.